you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Sci-Fi Blast producer and the Blurred Girl, Kara Mahorn, editor-in-chief at Sci-Fi Wire, Adam Sadursky, and for the first time in a minute, we actually have a fourth person in the room. So, Kwanzaa, would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Kwanzaa Osagyefo, and I am the author and co-creator of a comic series called Black that asks the question, what if only black people had superpowers?
It's really good, too. And there's also a new comic that came out this week, or a new graphic novel.
Right, so this is our first of the sort of interstitial series. Black AF, America's Sweetheart, just came out on January 31st, and it's all about this young woman who's the most powerful person on the planet, becoming like a patriotic superhero and how the world kind of reacts to that.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to
nicely,
be talking about
right? Like everything just goes smooth.
Yeah.
It's all good and there's no conflict and it's
no,
fine.
None. Yeah,
no, totally. All right. Great.
Congratulations on summing that up, Adam.
Yeah, you good. Did it. Yeah. Spoilers. Sorry.
Yeah. I ruined the whole bug. Jeez. Okay. So Ant-Man and the Wasp, some Dumbledore stuff. What else is on the docket? All kinds of things.
Oh, yeah.
It's a busy day.
It
and
is.
Also something that's an obvious topic, but but Karim is going to be able to take the lead on that. But before we begin, we like to talk about what people are into in the week. What's happening with you? Adam, what's going on with you this week?
You know, not really digesting a lot of new stuff. It's mostly been wrestling with, should I buy a Nintendo Switch or not?
Yes.
This is pretty much
the answer. I'm thinking you should.
And
only, the problem is I only want it for Breath of the Wild. I have a
but
PS4.
But once you have it, you'll feel differently.
But I have a PS4 and most of the, like, other exclusives bro. For... What? What? What's up, bro?
I'm telling you right now that there are other games that you will want it for. Just for
interesting.
Just like for the fact that, like, do you remember when the Wii U came out and they were like, oh, Wii U. And you're like, oh, you could just take it anywhere, right? And they were like, no. And then everyone was like, I'm not going to buy that then. This is exactly what it says. It's exactly what the Wii U was supposed to be. And there's other games that came out. I'll tell you the one that
but
really...
I should say, I don't want to take it anywhere.
Why?
You will.
Because I don't want to be like... I already have my phone, my head buried in a screen enough going everywhere as it is.
But
I don't want
is,
it anymore.
The thing is, even if you're at home,
like
honestly...
We talked about this when the first commercials came out. Like, the guy at the park with his dogs, like, ignoring his dog. It's like, no, dude, play with your dog. You're outside.
I don't know, man. That's the dream for me.
Like,
I'm more of a PlayStation type person, but the thing is, like, when I'm sitting there and I'm playing, like, Persona 5, I'm like, I would like to be able to play this on the train and get a couple more hours before I get to the office.
But also, like, legit, even when I'm at home, it doesn't even go up on the TV. I just keep the screen. Like, it's really, and I'm a TV person, but I really like just having it in my hand. There's something extremely satisfying about it. And also, you
Danny's
would really.
On the toilet, please.
You would really. That's, I mean, I don't. Did you think I was going to shy away and be like, not true? Facts. Of course I do. Of course. But you like Crawl. Crawl is this cool dungeon crawler game wherein you can play with multiple other people if you want to. You can play on your own. But if you play with other people, like, one person's a hero, everybody else is ghosts possessing monsters and items and stuff, and if they kill you, then they become the hero, and you level up.
Oh, you said about this, but I have to play it with other people.
No, you can play it alone, too.
Okay.
But it's really, really, really fun.
Kwanzaa, I'm an entirely antisocial gamer. I don't like playing games.
I hear you. Like, I got into like MMOs, so I play like the DC Online.
I used to do the MMOs for a while.
And I just started playing like Final Fantasy 14 and stuff, but I never play with people.
Yeah.
I never go on raids or anything. I just level up by myself. You know, I'm like that guy in Sword Art Online. I'm just like, I'm cool.
Yeah.
I'm cool. You guys just do your thing.
Yeah. But so that's, and you know, already having a console and having many other things I need to spend money on, it's been a debate. But I have like three or four friends who are all playing Breath of the Wild right now. And so when we all get together, that's all they talk about. And I'm just sitting in the corner, like shaking with the the need.
Yeah. And also, I mean, just, but you might as well just support them. I mean, they don't need it, But you might as well. They outsold the some entirety. The entire run of the Wii U been beaten already by the Switch in less than a year.
I'm not surprised. I think they kind of learned a lot from like the Wii, because I still have my Wii. Like that was
well, the Wii is like the ultimate. Right. The amount of consoles they sold to that is sick.
But I think that's where, like, when they made Wii U, they were just thinking like, oh, and we can, and then we can do this. It's like, no, 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 no.
Technology
bring
just
that
wasn't
magic
there.
Back from like.
It just was.
Console.
They just weren't ready to do the thing that they wanted to do, and they were like, "We'll just do it halfway. That'll be enough." No. You can't do that. Yeah. Anyway.
So that's my week.
There you go. Yeah. Well, the answer is yes, buy a Switch. And then once you got it, talk about it. What's going on with you? What's up with you this week?
Getting ready for February, Black History Month, man. That's when like all eyes are on the prize.
So we're in it, so you're late.
So yeah, I'm doing a lot of signings this month around New York and stuff like that, promoting Black and Black AF America's Sweetheart. I'm doing a few shows as well. So I'm going to be at the BAM Black Comics Art Festival. I think I'm doing something with the Black Panther premiere in Harlem.
Magic Johnson Theater.
Yeah, which is where I'm going to see Black Panther, because that's the only place to see Black Panther in New York, in my opinion. I got that ticket like day one. That's pretty much it. I mean, some other things. I mean, we're working on more Black AF, working on the follow up to Black, which is going to be very interesting. We put a little bit of a preview out there, and nobody has found it yet. It's a little hidden secret in the collected edition, the Kickstarter collected edition. People haven't quite picked up on the content yet. So if they don't do it by March, maybe I'm just going to release it online and say, like, here's what you guys missed. Here's a sneak peek.
So it's in the hardcover?
It's in the paperback.
Oh, it's in the paperback.
The Kickstarter edition paperback.
Hardcover? Where is
it? Hidden. It's a little hidden feature in there. A little like interactive digital content.
Okay.
That's cool.
I try to do some interesting things.
No, I love that.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about what's winning my week so that Karma can go last.
Yeah.
Because Karma already won the whole week.
Because it's
pretty
February.
Much.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I saw a movie a little while ago and it came out this week, so I'm going to count it for this week. It's called Tragedy Girls. It's a horror movie. And what I like about it is I think at its heart, what it's saying is, if you try to belittle or otherwise try to make the things that teenage girls do in their lives worthless, you do so at your peril. You know what I mean? Like, if you look at them and they're like, got their social game, and you're like, social media is meaningless. Pay attention to this. Like, what is this nonsense that you're doing? You do so at your peril.
Wow, oh, I'm in trouble, man.
Yeah. I just love everything. It's like it's just a really smart movie. It's a good horror movie. It's really funny. It's got a really great aesthetic too. Like, there's just some like, it's just a good looking movie. And yeah, it's available now. Like, you can get it physical media. It's on video on demand. It's on iTunes. It's a really, 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 it's one of the best horror movies I've seen in a while.
Well, I guess Get Out kind of set the bar for everybody now. So people are like,
yeah. Legit. This one is pretty smart in that way too. But all right, Karama.
Hey, Karama.
What could it be?
Did you do anything interesting this week?
Yeah,
like
I actually have a couple things that are winning my week. But yeah, everybody's teasing
you
me.
Know
because,
what we're talking about.
Yes, everybody's teasing me because I got to go to the Black Panther premiere in LA on the purple carpet.
I'm still dying from jealousy.
I know. Yeah. It's okay. Go to your happy place.
You went to my happy place.
It was absolutely phenomenal. So the whole thing started very late, which is pretty funny. But it was, first of all, I don't think anybody can really understand, and I was saying this last night on Instagram Live. I don't think anybody understands how big the actual carpet was that event. Like, you're seeing pieces of it, but it was a block long. They took like an entire block, all of Hollywood Boulevard, and put a purple carpet on it, covered it up with a tent. They had obviously ticket centers and stuff and will call and things like that. But then they had this one area with models dressed as Dormelage by like a big, like a shrine to Black Panther, and then like a big mouth of a panther going into the entire event. And then obviously the purple carpet where all the photographers and everybody lines up. And it was very bright, very hot. Sci-fi was all the way at the end. But I was able to really get some really interesting interviews. And actually, two of the videos from the purple carpet are now up on YouTube, on Sci-Fi Wire's YouTube. Yeah.
They're really good.
And I think the interesting thing about this movie is the excitement, not just of the actors that are in it, but the people that are going to see it. That's what you'll see in those videos. Like, it is palpable. Like, there's people, actors, like, I'm seeing people like David Ayolowo, like, jumping up and down, giddy, like, this is going to be amazing.
My favorite thing to come out of that, out of the premiere, was, I can't remember who it was, but some guy tweeted about his experience, and he said he was sitting next to Lawrence Fishburne.
Yes.
And the whole time, Lawrence Fishburne was just going, oh, shit.
Yes.
Oh, shit, over and over again.
You can't hear him. Yeah. No, it was really funny, because at one point, I'm like, is he okay? Because you could hear him, and it was just like, yeah, and there was...
You're like, is Cowboy Curtis having a heart attack?
That's you all right? Cowboy Curtis, I wasn't ready for
it's
that.
It's like, Pee-wee, I ain't never seen nothing like this.
So, yeah, it was and then there's, you know, the film. I will say... So I've been saying this to people. They're like, oh, it's, you know, we've talked about superhero fatigue here before. I'm not going to say this movie is Logan, because it's not. But like Logan, it is a Marvel story that they have then, like, wrote first and then connected to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It will answer just about every single question. I feel like when you talked about Star Wars, Adam, it answers every single question about Wakanda and T'Challa and Black Panther, except for one. But I think they're saving that for Infinity Wars. It is 2.5 hours. It does not feel like it. I've maybe felt it
once. But that's the
once.
Marvel standard. I mean, like, they're always 2.5 hours now.
But and there's humor in it, but not humor like Thor Ragnarok, where there was a funny improv scene that kind of took you out of the story and then you went back in. There's funny as things are going. And there's so many little moments. The girl who plays Shuri, T'Challa's sister, she's good. She was also in Black Mirror. She's phenomenal. And I think what's so great about this ensemble cast, and it is an ensemble cast, because I actually went in a little nervous. I'm like, I don't know if I can handle 2.5 hours of Chadwick Boseman. He's cute, but I didn't know, you know, if he could carry it. He doesn't have to. It's not 2.5 hours of him. It is an ensemble. What they do, the other two characters I was very nervous about were Manape, M'Baku, and Killmonger.
Well, they don't call him that in the film.
They don't. What they do is very smart with the whole ape thing. Because I'm like, you know you can't call a black man Manape, right? Like, right. Not in 20... Okay. But they didn't. And it was... it's a really, really fun ride. You can take your kids. Is there violence? Yes, there's violence just like any other Marvel movie. Right. I mean, Disney stays killing parents. But, and I'm not saying that happens in this film. I'm just saying that, like...
Well, they already did that in Civil War.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. They killed his dad in Civil War. Right. Something else that is very interesting that, and you'll see this also in the video, is John Connie, who played his father, T'Chaka, that was killed in Civil War. I guess it's, you could say it's a flashback. He does make an appearance in this movie. But he was on the right, purple carpet with his real-life son. And his real-life son, he's already talked about this, so this is not a spoiler, plays him, a younger him, in the movie.
Oh, that's cool.
And what's really interesting about it is younger, his son looks a lot like Chadwick Boseman. It's very bizarre. Honestly, it works out really well. The other thing that John Connie talked about is the language, that the Wakandan language is actually Hosa, South African, which is the one with the clicks.
Yeah.
And Chadwick was like, clicks are hard. I got to go to the press junket the next day. There's some interviews coming out of that. I got to talk to the production designer, Hannah Beekler, who was up for an Oscar for Moonlight, the costume designer, the writer, and... I got to talk to Andy Serkis.
I saw this. I had pictures of that.
He's very, very sweet. And is just as excited for this film as anybody else. So all of the hype, yes, it lives up to the hype. And then some. But what I love is that it didn't try to do too much.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I'm nervous for Infinity War because it's like 356 people in 2 hours. You know, this really tells the story, tells what you need. Gets you in and out and lets you care and learn about the characters. It's written really, really well. So, yeah, I'm going to see this movie like 17 times.
Oh, yeah.
Who won the purple carpet? Who was the most fabulous?
Wow.
Honestly.
Yeah. That's right. I went there.
You did.
That's a trap.
It's a toss-up. It really is between Janelle Monáe. I'm sorry. Janelle Monáe was great. I'm sorry. It's a toss-up more between Lupita.
Yeah.
With her purple gown and the armor. And honestly, I personally think Janisha Adams, Guinard, sorry, won. She is one of the Dora Milaje and Danai Gurira's stunt double. And she was in this fabulous Ankara, that's the name of the fabric, yellow hat with, like, skirt with a hoop. Like,
oh, I saw that, yeah.
She did not come amazing. To play. And that purple, I mean, that yellow and that purple, even Angela Bassett, her yellow against that purple. And I mean, that woman was just...
Well, I was going to say.
Just a little funny thing, though, that did happen at the press junket, press conference, rather. It's so funny that everybody's been, you know, knows each other and has hung out. They all really look like a family. Michael B. Jordan and Chadwick Boseman kept joking around and giggling and laughing. And Angela Bassett looked over at them like, if you two don't stop talking. And they were like, yeah, yes, well, Mom.
Yeah, when Angela Bassett says that, you say, okay.
But it was so cute, though, because they
were totally... child-beating guns.
They did. They totally sat back like, sorry. It was really, really funny. But it definitely is a family. And everybody was just so excited. Like, I talked to so many people who were like, I would be a security guard in this movie. Like, what do you need me to just hold a plate in the corner? Like, so many people just wanted to be involved. So, yeah, the excitement is real. The other thing is, like you mentioned, Magic Johnson Theaters. I know Alamo is having... I know people have bought out theaters across the country.
Yeah, Dog like, bought out some theaters.
Yes, like, they're taking... schools are buying out theaters.
Yeah, there are GoFundMes across, by the way. Like, you can just look them up and see. There's a lot of people looking for some funding, so you can exactly do that. Like, make sure that all those kids can be able to see that movie for free. Like, if you look online, you'll find there's plenty that still haven't been funded. You could throw $20 here and there. It's like a really great thing that you can do.
And the last thing I'll say about it is, when I came out of this movie, I thought of how my life and I guess my development would have been different had I been able to see this movie at 14. Had I been able to see, like, Shuri, you know, like a little geek girl with her gear and her tech and had the support of, like, a family around me telling me. I'm not saying that my family didn't support me. I'm just saying that when you feel isolated, because I live in a predominantly white neighborhood and high school. When you don't feel like you're the only one, when you feel like you were actually supported, had I had her as a hero or Danai Gurira's character, Koye, as a hero, how I might have kind of grown up differently. I definitely would have had a bald head by like 16. But so yeah, people, watch your kids because they are going to shave their heads after they see this movie.
I might shave my head after I see this movie.
My head is lumpy, so that is not going to happen.
I think the licensing went alone on Marvel for this is huge because even I'm like looking at some of the like gear and going like, yeah, I can do that. I can rock that Black Panther hoodie.
Cosplay is going to be, they definitely have changed the cosplay game when you see some of these costumes.
Okay, and now we can talk about that. All right, so this is what...
Speaking of cosplay,
this is what happened. I don't know if Eve Ewing was the first person to bring it up. She was the first person I saw bring it up in my feed. The question of, okay, so Black Panther is going to be like this cultural moment. It's going to be probably the biggest movie of the year. What happens when Halloween come around and white kids want to dress up like Black Panther? A bigger conversation. What if they want to dress up like someone from Wakanda in general?
That's a huge cultural win for us because it's not just about the inspiration for like somebody seeing themselves in a film. It's about what has been the case for most of the time in media where it's like as a young Black person, you've had to impress yourself on these like characters who didn't look like you. I think the reverse of that is kind of a beautiful thing. And, you know, since it's science fiction, it's like, you're not necessarily appropriating anything. Wakanda is not like a real culture. You know, you're participating in superheroism.
But what I like about it is that I still think it affords an opportunity. And I think you have to be very careful in the way that you address things with kids. But I think it affords an opportunity to say, okay, I was talking about this with Vita and Danny too the other day, wherein, Black Panther costume is a superhero suit. Wakanda is a little different. You know what I mean? Like that when they put out that Maui thing, with Moana, where like literally like the tattoos are built and like it was like a brown skin, that was out. You know what I mean? But like, it is an opportunity to say like, okay, like you can't put on a race, but you could put on a costume.
Absolutely.
Right. You know what I mean? I do think it's an opportunity have that conversation.
I think it's simpler though too. Like, one is a costume, like dressing up as Black Panther, no problem. Putting on blackface, that's a problem.
But I just think that is like, it's great and it is a beautiful thing. And I think that part of the beautiful thing is that it gives an opportunity to take something that could be otherwise complex and make it into something that can be simple. It can be taught in like a couple sentences, and now they're out in the costume and they can feel good.
Yeah, because
I'm thinking of Anika Noni Rose when she played Princess Tiana in Princess and the Frog. There's a beautiful, I think it's still on her Instagram, there's a beautiful little video of a little white girl, blonde white girl, who met her at an event and was all dressed up as Tiana and was like, "You're my favorite princess ever, and I want to be Princess Tiana when I grow up." And all these people were commenting all this nasty stuff, and it was crazy. It was like, the little girl just wants to be a princess.
Yeah.
She doesn't, you know what I mean? That's all this is. Calm down. And
because we teach kids that. They don't see that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. So I think it would be a bad idea, like, if, like they did with that crazy pin, if the mask had like another person's eyes under it, that would be a bad idea.
Yeah.
But I think for the most part, the other thing that, and people are not going to know this until they see the movie, but I was really happy to see this. I mean, and it's not really a spoiler either. Wakanda, because they've talked about this, especially Ta-Nehisi Coates' run. Wakanda is like real life Timbuktu. It was a center of like thought and like university and technology. So people from all over the world, including Europe, used to travel to Timbuktu. It's the same thing with Wakanda, except Wakanda has been kept secret, so only certain people have gotten that access. But when you see the movie, I think a lot of these questions are going to be
answered. I'm just excited in general because I saw some of the interviews that you did, and I've seen other interviews too, where it's like Wakanda is a hub for a lot of Africa. And so, you know, it's this reminder that it's not a monoculture. It's a lot of parts of Africa. And so, like, didn't Ryan Coogler, like, he came in and said, like, I want there to be this color to represent this. I want this to be this. So,
yes,
like, there's a lot of that happening, too.
I actually asked Ruth Carter because I thought the costume designer was over that. And she said, no, Ryan was very specific that Water Tribe, green, like, this. It felt a lot like Airbender.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Avatar. Airbender. Like, you know, this group has this color. These are the, you know, and then she went to work going through and finding specific real life cultures to pull the beadwork, the colors, the art and stuff from. But Ryan, he was very specific about that. Yeah. And the other thing that this movie deals with, which I think is amazing, is that I think a lot of times, especially in social media, African Americans are looked at as a monolith. We all think the same things, look the same way, talk about the same things. This movie is such a wonderful metaphor to show, no, just like Africa is not a country, it's a continent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Wakanda is a country and has different people from other countries visiting, giving their concepts and ideas. And even within, we talked about this with the Klingons.
Yeah.
When people were saying, why do the Klingons look different now than they did then? Because
that's an opportunity.
There are different ethnic groups within the Klingon Empire.
Yeah. I mean, if it was me, that's how I would be.
That's the story I'm telling.
Yeah.
And I mean, that makes sense too, because that also reflects like a lot of like African politics as well, where the tribalism is a huge like point of contention in a lot of like how countries operate there, you know, where it's like arguing over like language and land, and the same thing in, you know, pretty much every other country. So I think bringing that through in Black Panther is like really cool.
Yeah. Anyway, my perspective on it is, I think what's great about the idea of young white kids saying like, oh, I would want to wear a Black Panther costume, or I want to wear whatever. Like, to me, it's like, I just think it gives parents an opportunity to up their game and be smarter about how they talk about this stuff. Just because, like, when I was coming up, my parents gave me a nonsense thing because they thought they were doing right by me. They said, be colorblind. That's not a solution. Do you know what I mean? Like, the world isn't colorblind. You can't, you know what I mean? If you teach your child that, you're teaching them at a detriment. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean? Because then they have to unlearn that.
Yeah, you're teaching them how to ignore.
Right. And the thing is, you can't, like, if you really are a caring person, you're not ignoring the fact that, like, that the world is not colorblind. Like, it's not how it works. So I think that it, from my perspective, like Black Panther, in addition to all the other things that it has this opportunity to do, I do think it's opening a dialogue not just with adults but also with kids. Yeah. I don't know why it took me such a long time to get there, but that's what I was trying to say.
And I think it'll be interesting because I think there probably will be, you know, there's a take for everything on the internet, so there will be people publishing articles saying that is wrong, and it's like it's kind of a hard. I think I don't think there's a lock, steady, easy answer.
No, but what I like about it is that it opens a dialogue in that we're saying, like, okay, how are we talking to our kids? And I think that is such a powerful thing. It's such a great opportunity because, again, like, I had to fight what I was taught because I was taught wrong. Like, even when my parents were trying to teach me right, they taught me something that made it so that I was not seeing a full person when I looked at them. Yeah. You know, and I think that this movie, again, in addition to everything else it's going to do, I think affords an opportunity to be able to talk to kids and be like, you can't say that at that point. Like, it's impossible.
But like you said, Adam, you're not going to please everybody.
Right.
Somebody's going to say something and some, you know.
Haters going to hate.
Yeah.
Also, and at the end of the day, you know, it's a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
It's not real. Like, I've had this discussion even about the I had somebody ask me, like, well, what about his accent? And I'm like, what about it? Like, well, it sounds like it's from South Africa. I said, because John Connie is from South Africa. He's Zulu. What? Like, well, that's not really where Wakanda is. I'm like, Wakanda really isn't anywhere because it's fiction.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
gonna
so
be, it's going to be,
gonna
okay.
be that yeah. happening. You
oh,
know?
Sure. We live in a world where people couldn't enjoy The Last Jedi because the bombs fell down at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
You know, it's like, why are they falling down in space? It's
the dark side of geekery.
If that, yeah, if that is enough to take you out of something, that's really sad.
I don't know. But honestly, like I said, the stuff that I saw you talking about and the kind of conversation I saw coming out of it is like the kind of splitting hairs that, let's say, I mind it less. I'd rather those conversations. I would rather us talk about that. That's thoughtful. That's not, why didn't the bombs drop in space? Who cares? Like, what do we do?
Space bombs.
Yeah, yeah. Like, how do we address people wearing the costume in real life and what it means, and how do we do that not just for adults but for kids too, is a great thing to have, not necessarily an easy answer, but a long, ongoing conversation.
Yeah, because
It will delight me to no end to go to the neighborhood that I grew up in, which was much like yours, and see all of the kids, like, of all backgrounds dressed up as Black Panther asking for candy. Like, that would be magic.
Yeah.
Actually, I might have to travel to my hometown and watch this. This is a good idea.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say is,
Just an army of Ulysses Claws running around the neighborhood.
Wow.
That's horrible.
Now I'm just thinking little kids doing that. I'll be Ulysses Claw.
That would be bad.
Oh, God.
They're going to know that he's a baddie in this movie. I don't think anybody's going to want to play him.
Yeah.
But I will say this, the other conversation that happens in and around the film, and I've been having this conversation for a while, but they address it in the film, is the difference between Africans and African Americans. It's an incredible conversation. It is one that Killmonger is a part of, and that's all I'm going to say about it. But I think that is the discussion I would love to have with people after this movie comes out, because the way that somebody who was born and raised in Africa and then never left, that was never dealt with what anybody in another country thinks of them versus somebody who has, is a real life issue. And even for Africans that I speak to about this, not all of them are thrilled about the movie. Like, why has it got to be an animal? What is with you people and animals and electricity? Like, they just, like, and it's really interesting because, and they're saying, you people, like, you Americans, you African Americans. So, again, there is that other voice that these are not conversations we get to have in film, much less a comic book movie, you know? So, yeah, I want to have all of these conversations. I can't wait till everybody sees this movie and we can actually talk about this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I look forward to it because it's like, not only are we going to, like, in 2 weeks, we'll actually have a chance to talk about it on the podcast, but I mean, again, I think we're all going to end up seeing it multiple times. And every time you watch a movie like this, you're going to get something new each time. And then every time you have a conversation with another person, then you get something new from them and their perspective. So I think it's going to be really wonderful. But wait, there's one thing I know about the Black Panther purple carpet, which is going to lead into our next topic.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if you saw this, but somewhere on the purple carpet, there was an ad for Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes, there was.
It was this little teeny tiny thing announcing that the trailer was going to be there.
It was like, And I can't remember.
Which I loved. I don't know why that was so funny to me, but it was
just good.
Somebody
took a picture. I didn't see it when I was there because, like I said, this thing is like a block long.
Yeah.
But it was there, and people, multiple people, I saw it on social media, and I saw where it was, and I'm like, oh, that was very smart.
Yeah, there's really just funny. Something like textually and subtextually really kind of clever about it that I liked. But yeah, so it was announcing that there was going to be a trailer for Ant-Man and the Wasp that was going to drop, and then it dropped. And we've all watched it, and you have probably watched it too. And I'm curious to see how you felt about Ant-Man and the Wasp prior to seeing a full trailer and how you feel about it now.
I don't know. It's weird. I felt like Guardians before when Guardians came out. I'm like, oh my God, I haven't read Guardians in years. You know what I mean? Like that's how it was when I first started hearing about the movie. I'm like, okay, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Okay, Hank Pym. Like I went back to the animated series. Yeah. That was where my mind went to. And then because Hank now is Michael Douglas. And yeah,
he's kind of the mentor character.
Yeah, he's like the mentor character.
They went for Scott Lang instead.
Right. Yeah, and they sort of like jumped over the part where he had mental issues and smacked around his wife.
Nobody wants to. Nobody
yeah, I was going to say, that's
so,
for the best.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm glad they kind of jumped that and went, you know, into this new storyline. I'll say I liked the tech and the gear, and I hope the humor is like Guardians. I hope I'm surprised like Guardians of the Galaxy did. The previous Ant-Man, I was like, huh, okay. So I'm hoping that that was kind of my reaction to the trailer. Like, oh.
I thought it was just a really fun trailer, and that's what's, I think, been key to like Marvel's success, is that they're having a good time with this. Like they're out there to entertain, and what like delighted me to no end, and what I liked about the first Ant-Man was them taking a power that, you know, when you describe it, it's like, it's kind of a lame power. And they show like what's so cool about being able to shrink and enlarge things. And you see it in action throughout that trailer. And all I did was smile because I was like, that's what you're supposed to do when you watch a film. It's just like, Ant-Man's cool. Like, that's what I left the trailer with. It's like, Ant-Man's super cool. And so is the Wasp.
And that Pez container.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, they said in the past, that they're like, this is kind of like as close as we're currently going to be able to get to Deadpool. And
yes,
that is like such a like a Deadpool shout out because Deadpool loves Hello Kitty.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
The other thing was the Lawrence Fishburne appearance as Giant Man. And I had
Goliath, right? Is that the same character?
Goliath, yeah.
Goliath.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
shows were done.
No. I'm calling him Giant Man because I think that was like in classic, that was what they called him. He's a big, huge guy. The only thing that made me nervous is, in the comics, he was sort of the sacrificial lamb, and I just hope that doesn't happen in this.
I'm kind of figuring him for a villain, or the villain, working with Ghost.
Oh, see, I don't think so. I don't
and
think so.
And female Ghost.
See, I think that female Ghost is working for Michelle Pfeiffer.
Whoa.
That's interesting.
Anyway, sorry.
It was like the modem.
I just rebooted everyone's computer right
nicely
now.
Nicely done. Yeah. It's like somebody picked up the phone. And you're like, no.
I don't think so. I think Marvel has shown clearly that they're putting value in expanding even like these sort of ancillary characters into something like really cool, like Heimdall and Valkyrie and like Thor Ragnarok were like really, really awesome. And it's like, you know, I've read Thor comics and I'm like, Heimdall, who cares about that guy? But it's like, Heimdall's pretty badass.
Yeah.
I'm like, and I think to the extent that it's like, he might be one of the baddest people like in Asgard, but he just keeps it cool. He's like, look, I just do my thing, man.
That's
gotta save some Asgardians, like, gotta chop it up.
Well, partly that's just good casting.
Yeah.
You cast the man that just does that in every single role.
That's pretty much.
Unless he's Luther and then he's just banging down doors like a lunatic.
That's true.
But I just, watching the trailer, it struck home for me, I think, how smart it was to make this movie, Ant-Man and the Wasp. An Ant-Man 2, it's just Ant-Man 2. I don't
boring.
Think there you could have found any legs for that, so to speak. But by bringing that dynamic in, I think it really, that's going to give this movie so much more life than it might have otherwise had.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean when I say like Marvel's been so smart. They're not afraid to break things. You know, while they're out there making these movies, and that was one of the things that like surprised me the most about like choosing Guardians of the Galaxy. Because as a geek, like if somebody had told me like 5 years before that they were going to make a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, I would have laughed in their face.
Right.
And I'm like so much of a geek. Like I love Rocket Raccoon. I love Rocket Raccoon when Rocket Raccoon was a woman.
He's going back.
Yeah. Like I got deep Rocket Raccoon love, and the thought that Groot and Rocket Raccoon are now like in the public like culture cracks me up, because then I turn around and I look at like, you know, DC, and I'm like, you guys can't even get Wonder Woman like up in the cut. Come on.
Yeah.
That's a raccoon and a tree.
Yeah, Groot and Rocket Raccoon before, that's amazing to me.
Yeah. Do you like the sci-fi connection, by the way? Speaking of the character of Ghost.
Oh, well, we didn't actually see her face, but...
But that's who it is. That's, yeah. I mean, that's how she's listed in IMDb, at yep. least. I mean, unless it's a lie. Hannah John Kamen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, who is on Killjoys.
She was Dutch on Killjoys.
Killjoys, yeah.
So, that's kind of dope.
It is.
But I will say one thing. I'm gonna bring up a series of tweets by a freelancer who I think writes a lot for Kotaku right now, named Maddie Myers. And this is like the raining on the parade, but I want to get the response thoughts about it.
I have a feeling I know what this is.
It's funny that Marvel believes I'm going to be even remotely capable of rooting against the Ghost, an anti-capitalist hacker who has it in for Tony Stark, especially now that they've updated the role from a mysterious dude I don't know to Hannah John Kamen, Nigerian-Norwegian sci-fi phenom.
Right.
And I think that is kind of, that's like the one thing I'll say. I mean, like, I don't think, is Hank Pym supposed to be rich? Like, I don't know what his situation is in this version of the story.
That's what's interesting. I'm not sure, because she's been Tony Stark's villain in the comics, in the comics. So this is a new twist. Honestly, I even thought about the fact that villain, I want to see her, and I want to see Shuri up against Tony in Infinity Wars. Like, you are not the smartest or the richest or the best on this planet. You need to sit down.
It's like, you made armor? That's cute.
Yeah, that's cute. Like,
so, but wait, what's the beef?
I think the beef is that, like...
like, rooting against this fabulous person. Yeah, basically. Like, she's not going to be able to feed.
The Ghost doesn't really seem based on what the prior continuity is, like, in modern context. Kind of sounds like the hero we need.
Yeah, like, right. they're saying that, like, the way they're setting Ghost up, it's like they're the hero, they're the anti-hero.
Well, but first of all, how do we know they're not doing that in the movie?
Exactly.
We see like one shot of her for 2 seconds.
Exactly.
And you know, these, look at Loki, right? Like, Loki was villain as villain can be, and then in Thor Ragnarok suddenly he's the anti-hero, like, helping them out, you know? So I am wary of creating a narrative before we know what the actual narrative is.
Well, I'm not creating one. I'm quoting a tweet.
No, I'm not saying them. Yeah.
But I think it's an interesting question.
I think it's Pilates. They're stretching.
It is an interesting question, but it's a question that needs to be asked once you actually know what the thing is. We know this character, this person is playing the character. We know the character in the comics, but we also know that Marvel, as Kwanzaa said, like, is not afraid to break things, change things. They've done that before with characters from the comics and when they brought them to the screen. So until we know more.
I.e. Mandarin.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there you go.
That was a good one, man.
I love that. I'm a huge fan of that turn. Yeah, yeah. But until we know more, like, let's not assume.
But the thing is, when I quote that tweet, what I'm saying is I see Ghost as an opportunity.
Yeah.
And I hope they take it.
I hope so.
That is
my hope.
Because I think the most interesting villains sometimes are ones who don't think that they're villains.
Right.
You know, like, that's what makes Doctor Doom, like, so kind of charming.
I love Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
Like, I also think that's why you'll love my top tier
Marvel villain.
Definitely.
Really good.
Like, Doctor Doom to me is how you feel any time that you're riding a subway in New York. Like, that's just how he feels about the world. Like, he's in that moment constantly.
I just have a new understanding
of Doctor Doom all of a sudden. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. I'm also sitting on the train. It's like, I totally get how Doctor Doom feels.
I'm also never taking the subway with Kwanzaa again, ever.
No, I'm only taking it with Kwanzaa. That's it. I finally found a like-minded person.
Yeah. You start referring to yourself in the third person all the time.
Yeah, sounds good.
I wish all of you would die and get out of my way.
Hey, listen, the people of Latveria love Dr. Doom.
That's true.
Because they're contractually not allowed to not love him.
Dr. Doom.
So, what's up? Good plan. Nailed it. I don't know. I'll take him over Trump. Anyway, that's a whole other topic of conversation. Oh, man. And there was something that happened. Anyway, speaking of villains who I don't necessarily think they're villains... something happened regarding the next Fantastic Beasts movie, that being The Crimes of Grindelwald, and that is that...
Was Johnny Depp out all of a sudden?
Yeah, I wish. Nice try. keep hope alive. No, there's really not enough hope. But anyway, so it's not that he's not there. It's that, you know, here was this opportunity because we've got Jude Law coming in to play Dumbledore. And people thought, like, okay, so we know at least, like, by way of the author that these two had a relationship. It was never addressed in the Harry Potter books, but we know that Dumbledore is gay. We know that Grindelwald was somebody that he used to date. And so now these characters are going to be in a movie together. And people thought, are we going to get a vibe of this? Are we going to see it? And then the director came in and was like, it's not going to, no, not directly. It's not going to happen. And people were not happy about this. And I am curious as to everybody's thoughts about that and like maybe how Yates could have dealt with that, and also subsequently how J.K. Rowling could have dealt with that, because she also became very angry. But then, in fairness, she also was getting death threats, which I'm not sure is really a grand solution.
Yeah. That's
never really a great solution.
No, it's never really worked for me. Whenever people were like, I hope you die, I'm not like,
you know,
well,
you've got a point. Yeah.
So, I mean, when I first heard it, the first thing I thought of was marketing. Like, even if there was going to be some sexual tension or something that they show in the movie, they didn't want to give it away. So I thought it was like, nah, it's not going to be there. We're not really addressing it. I didn't, until I saw, like, all the back and forth, I didn't realize how, you know, it sounded like then he was serious about, oh, no, it's not going to happen at all. We're not covering this. And I see why people are understandably upset, but it seemed like people were more upset at the reactions of him and J.K. Rowling than they were at the concept. So I also think there was a little bit of mis-media management happening.
Yeah, because I mean, the thing is, as a creative, I could see that response in your head being like, oh, that's not what the story's about. We're not going to be addressing that. Like, it's really about, you know, this central character. And, like, that's just not right. The focus of this narrative and stuff like that. It doesn't change who Dumbledore is because, you know, I think once J.K. revealed that about the character, like, I went back and reread the books and, like, and looked at the movies again. And I was just kind of like, well, where does that matter in the story? But it did just put a different light in, like, you know, some of his actions and stuff. But I think it's kind of one of those tough things where, you know, you say something and it's out in the public and then it just gets like picked apart and over-examined, and maybe that wasn't like the original intent of the statement, you know, but that's
yeah, the responses that followed. Like, what did you think when you saw in the director's response and then J.K. Rowling's like, get off my lawn, leave me alone?
I have some really strong responses to that. So Adam, how did you respond first? And then I'll,
first of all, I don't know how much, like, my response was mostly to listen to what people had to say. I don't really think that, you know, my opinion on this particular subject is as relevant as it might be for people who actually, you know, are living that experience and want to see that represented on screen and everything like that. And so I was primarily just kind of like, I'm just going to see what the discussion is and absorb it and kind of, you know, digest it that way. I mean, it's just interesting. I think it's a shame a little bit because there is an opportunity to, and no one, the thing is, I don't think anyone's asking for, like, you know, we need to have a really hot and steamy sex scene between Dumbledore and Grindelwald and everything. It's like, it's a PG-13 fantasy family movie. Have that level of romance in it. Like, what's the big deal? Right. And not what's the big deal. Obviously, I know it's a big deal in representation sense, but
exactly
what's the big deal in terms of,
like,
why would you not do that, right? Like,
okay.
Like, why would you not have, you know, Harry, Ginny level, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, that level of romance. They never, like, got it on hot and heavy.
Right.
It was just kind of like a romance, right? And so it's disappointing in the sense that it should be on the same level. It should just be like, if you can include a heterosexual romance in a movie like that, why not the other way around?
Also, if your ex is going to be the baddie, there should be some
heat.
Tension there. Like,
it's like, that's why I don't mess with you no more, Grindelwald.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Wow. That was it. I wish it was that.
Yeah. So that was, I mean, that's the thing. I think it's a shame. I think that, you know, God, I wish we could just get to a place where it wouldn't be a discussion anymore because it's not a question that you can show that.
Okay, so the thing about that, unfortunately, is that that's literally never going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think that's true.
Tell us what you think.
So, you know how you were talking about how with Black Panther, you watched it and you thought, like, imagine if I was a teenager seeing Shuri and, like, how that would change me.
Mm-hmm.
For me, this is very similar. And I think that when people react the way that they do, it is because of a lack, again, of representation. And in particular, in family media, right? Because it's one thing to feel like if it's an R-rated movie, then maybe. But, you know, like for me, I was thinking about this a lot. Like when I was growing up, when I was a kid, we did do this thing for sci-fi. Like there's an article coming out where it's like, what was your first geeky thing? And I remember when I was a kid, my parents used to give me these VHS tapes from Family Home Entertainment. And it could be all kinds of stuff. It was like Pound Puppies, Ninja Turtles.
Oh, and Pound Puppies.
Adorable, right? And there was this one Hanna-Barbera thing called Star Fairies. And it was just
Star Fairies.
And it was just about like these fairies who granted kids wishes and they had to go and go on an adventure to be able to actually do that properly. And they were, I mean, super femme, just about as like even the spunky ones, you know what I mean? And I watched this like every day. I loved it. And like for me, I was like, oh, this is like I would love to be a fairy going out and granting kids wishes. This sounds great. And then I discovered the derogatory meaning of the word fairy because I was like five at the time. And then all of a sudden it changed everything. Right. And now I felt very much alone because I didn't know. You mean like how do you
were
even
five. You didn't know how to quantify.
And also like how do you like you're only beginning to understand yourself. And like so how do you even begin to try to reach out and see like what other queer kids are out there in my community? It's almost impossible because it's already denigrated. Even when you're a kid, you don't even understand what it means. You're already being told that it's bad.
Right.
Right. And this is why people, I think, now are looking and saying like, I'm upset. Not for me, because like I'm an adult now and I've learned to deal with it and I'm a little hard and I'm a little distrustful. And what I want for the next generation is for them to not have to feel the way that I felt. For them to, you know what I mean? Like it doesn't have to be perfect. I just want it to be better.
Right.
And seeing an opportunity, them saying, okay, so Dumbledore is gay. Dumbledore is, do you know what I mean? Like, these are a bunch of wizards. This is like their religion. Do you know what I mean? He's like the priest. He's like the rabbi.
He's the high priest.
He's the teacher. The you know what I mean? Like, yeah, he is the leader. And to make him gay, but like outside of the context, like after the books are already out, it's not that it does nothing, but like you're still waiting for that opportunity where the thing's going to come out and you're actually going to see it. And then it's a family movie. Family's going to go see it, and it changes so much. And people want that. And when they see, oh, maybe is this going to happen? And then not only is the way that it's worded in such a way it feels like it's definitely not going to, but that now this woman, J.K. Rowling, who people were like, is she on our side? The way she then speaks makes it seem like she is not on our side, right? Especially, again, from people who are have the walls up and feel distrustful. They're going to get upset about that. And I think that's what's so unfortunate. And it's another thing that now has to be repaired.
And then the question that I also had after I was reading all the things was, you announced that he's gay. Like you said, you went back and read the books and looked at movies and like, okay, it wasn't really addressed. And here's an opportunity to address it and or show a relationship and you don't. So why did you announce that he was gay? Like, was it just
well, she also
for
announced
sales,
that she
or?
Wished that Hermione, she had made Hermione black.
Black, yes.
You know? Yeah.
But I think it's
like, she did in the Broadway play.
You can eat it too. I mean, that's the thing. Like, at least there was some kind of forward momentum. Like, right? Like, yeah, we've got a play. We've got, you know what I mean? Like, that's something. This is, well, I don't, you know, I just think it's unfortunate.
It is. I agree. And, you know, when I said we're going to get, I do think, honestly, I believe that we will get there at some point. Because I think if you look at a lot of TV now, there are, and not, you know, we're not there fully yet either on TV, but it's also a lot of times where there are gay characters and it's not like he or she is the gay one, you know, it's just that it just is.
Yeah. And we're seeing some examples of that. And we talked about Black Lightning.
Yeah.
Wherein like we're starting to see that,
yes,
which is like one of the really great things about Black Lightning. So yeah, I mean like we're seeing good
and
bad.
And it's normalized.
Yeah.
The thing that's great about Black Lightning, it's not like,
absolutely.
Hey, oh my God, we didn't, it's like, where's Jennifer? Oh, she's over to girlfriend's. I can't remember that girl's name. Where's she again?
I like that.
Like, it was just very normal.
That was a great moment. And I think, so obviously, I don't think we're there on TV yet, obviously, across the whole spectrum either, you know, like, transgender characters are still very much, they're the trans one, you know, and all that stuff. But it's slow progress. It's not as fast as I think a lot of us would like. And I'm sure especially people who are living that experience would like. But
it's really, honestly, it's because it's a family thing. And I think for a lot of us, right, and for me, this will be the analogy. I don't think anyone else is going to be quite literally this way. But like, I look at it and I think, in my heart, I'm still a star fairy that wants to grant wishes to kids. And the wish that I really want to grant is that queer kids are going to be able to feel safe and respected and to see themselves in a family movie so that they can feel a little bit safer. Yeah. And, you know, and that's and why and that's why it's such a big thing. I think that's why so the reaction was so visceral.
Yeah. And it doesn't even have to be a bit like it doesn't have to be the center of the story. Right. It doesn't. It's like any more than, you know, again, how Harry and Ginny getting together wasn't the center of the stories by Harry's quest against Voldemort and everything. And this was just the romantic subplot. Like, that's all we need. That's all you need. You know, you don't need to shine a giant spotlight on it. Just treat it like you would treat a romance in a movie, in a family film.
You just treat them like human beings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's important too, because aside from its impact on people who are having that experience, I think by putting that into like the public view, it allows people to see these experiences. Like, 'cause that's what media does. It tells these stories that then make it a little less foreign to people who have not had that experience before, who have not been around people like that before. I think that's something that's going to, you know, come out of Black Panther. I think that would be something that would come out of
could potentially
this.
Come out of something else,
and
too.
Just, like, you know, and just from, like, you know, a brand position, we're seeing all of this energy behind Black Panther. We know it's going to be a huge success. You would probably have the same thing happen if you just, like let Dumbledore be out, you know? But then at the same time, I was just thinking about his character again. I was like, he is very, very reclusive, you know, and thinking about like his personal experiences, that maybe that's in their minds just a part of his character. Someone who just keeps it all very close to the vest. You never really quite know what he's doing or thinking. But and I think me being a little, you know.
When I feel like part of the reaction, like I think to Karima's point especially, like part of the reaction was a reaction to the reaction. Because it's like, when J.K. Rowling put out there that Dumbledore was gay, she assumed a responsibility, I feel like. And it's kind of the same thing that, you know, when with the 100, where they went into all these forums and they were like, you know, we know that gay characters and bisexual characters have been treated badly on screen before. We're not going to do that, whatever. And you would expect. So, and then when she reacts, when J.K. Rowling reacts
or
negatively
Star Trek.
To the
Star
criticism,
Trek when they did that,
or like right. in a certain level of, I shouldn't have to explain myself. It's like, well, you do, because you put out there, you put this out there, and you have to be conscious of the context in which you were doing that.
I found her reaction very odd.
Yeah.
Like, just so out of character
you know
for her.
Here's the thing. I think that people, it's very hard, right? Like, look, here's the thing. I have people that I know on Twitter that are followed by J.K. Rowling. And if by some weird opportunity somebody shares it and J.K. Rowling listens to this, I don't want to shout her down. Because
no,
there's plenty of
no,
people
I'm
there's
not...
plenty of people that are already doing that. I understand as much as I can that if you have like millions of people following you on Twitter and you're that far in the public eye, that there are just going to be moments where you lose yourself. If you allow yourself to look into the abyss, you become the abyss. You know what I mean? Like, and I think that, like, from my perspective looking at it, I think that's what happened. I agree with you, Adam, absolutely. As somebody that talked a lot about The 100 and what I felt that Jason Rothenberg owed fans because of the promises that he and his other producers and writers are making, I absolutely think that J.K. Rowling has a responsibility. Once you open the door and start talking about that thing, you're asking for trust. And when people give you that trust, you have to treat that like it is gold in your hand. You have to treat it like something fragile, because it is, especially for LGBTQIA people. Like, that trust is so, so fragile. And I think that is the unfortunate thing, is that, like, it can just take one wrong sentence and then it just turns into an avalanche so quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's tough too, because I mean, like, she has that power, you know.
Right.
Like, I think if, because, you know, Jake, when she stands up for what she believes in, she's like fully leaning into it. So like, she could probably say like, no, he has to be this way, and the movie production company would be right. Like, crap.
But
okay,
even if
let's
you're
go
not,
reshoot.
But even if you're not gonna do that, like, my thing is, that's fine. You know, I don't know if it's fine or not. Whatever, that's your creative decision, but. Then when the reaction comes back, you can't be like, well, I don't need to respond to this. I don't need to treat this like it's the serious thing that it is. You know, I think at that point, she does owe a certain, even if it, not an explanation necessarily, but an address of the criticism as legitimate, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where I think the ball gets dropped, is if you, and I understand, like, as a creator, if people are suddenly coming at you, you're probably just like, you know, I don't even, and like you said, especially on Twitter, when you've got millions of followers, and that place can really turn into a cesspool. You know, it's probably very easy to have that moment where you're just like, screw you guys, you know, but
yeah.
But again, when she opened that door, and then you just have to acknowledge
that you did open the door, and now this is involved in that, and what are you, what do you have to say about it? I feel like that's it.
I'm going to go back to like Mark Waid when Strange Fruit dropped, and it was like, no, and he didn't yell and scream. He was like, okay, I'm listening.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I thought this was a really good story. This is really meaningful to me. Tell me what, tell me your thoughts. Tell me how we should have addressed this. And it wasn't saying I'm perfect. And I really respected him for that. I still don't like that comic.
Yeah.
But I respect him for saying, this is what I thought was a good story. This means a lot to me. But I'm willing to hear the criticism. I'm willing to listen.
And you know, I'm really glad that you brought up comics, because one of the great thing about comic books is that I think that it does afford, I mean, like, to me, it's in a lot of ways still the last Wild West. It's one of the last mediums wherein we still have a certain degree of control. And I did an interview with two people, Vita Ayala and Danny Lohr, who have a Black Mask book coming out at the end of this month on February 28th. And yeah, I talked to them for about 10 minutes, so I'm going to segue it to me. So take it away, me. What's your name?
Vita Ayala.
Danny Lohr.
Okay. And what is the name of the book?
The Wilds.
When is it coming out?
The first issue will be dropping February 28th, everywhere.
And what is it about?
The book is about a post-apocalyptic world in which people, in order to survive this plague that has turned a solid half of the population into floral zombies, have to come together and form these like walled off settlements. It's specifically about one settlement called the Compound, which is kind of a mixture between the black market and the USPS. And it is about the people that go out and find salvage and also ferry things between other settlements and the dangers that they face out in the wild and also back in the compound. So it's about the worst retail job.
Why was it a story that the two of you wanted to tell?
You want to start then?
I mean, at its heart, it's about the burden of survival and who we put it on, and how much we have the right to expect not only of others but of ourselves. That some of the roughest elements of that is because people expect us to carry those burdens, that we never put them down.
It's and just to go along with what Danny is saying, there are certain groups of people that are expected to carry the burden of survival, whether that be emotional or physical, in the real world and in the book. People of color, especially women of color, which just true across the board, and how we kind of buy into that and we kind of lose pieces of ourselves and end up being used up and never, you know, are allowed to partake in the rewards of that, and how it's okay to say no. That's thematic, but of course there's a bunch of flower zombies and people fighting.
It's plants versus zombies.
They're except queers and browns.
I think it's an interesting point to talk about the idea of people feeling like they have to pick up the slack and handle a lot of the heavy lifting of things, because we're dealing with that right now. And we literally had an election in a particular state where a child molester was almost elected. And the reason that they weren't was, you know, as per Twitter, it was like, thanks, black people. Thanks, black women specifically. You took care of it. And thanks for that.
It's not black women's job to do everything for everyone. And I want to say, like, do, you know, what you need to do to keep safe and do what you need to do the work that you want to do. But it is okay not to be someone's mule, which is something I saw on Twitter, like, we're not your mule. And I'm like, yeah, that's a really good way to put it. We're not out here trying to save you. We are out here trying to save ourselves and B, do the right thing. Y'all can participate if you want to, you should, but stop putting the burden on us. And that is also in terms of, you know, we're talking about it at this big political level, but to me also smaller community level or even familial level, where you expect this one person to do all the work. And
they can't even do they can't do the work properly if we don't give them space to rest and they don't know themselves well enough to go, part of me even taking any burden that I choose to take is knowing when to rest.
Right, exactly. And that at the end of the day, you know, the main character Daisy has really bought into this. You know, if I don't keep doing what I'm doing and working as hard as I can and putting myself in these dangers, then we'll, you know, things could collapse. And she comes to this point, she realizes, like, you know what, I deserve to rest. I deserve, you know, to love. I deserve to be able to not be in danger all the time. And that's okay in real life too. It's okay to just say, hey, I'm going to unplug from Twitter now, or hey, I'm going to not do this and this. You know, I don't owe it to you. I don't owe you my suffering.
But I can't beat these flower zombies.
It's pretty cool.
I have asthma. And
there's a scene, and I don't remember what issue it is in, but you get to see the other people in the compound, and you realize that the people that are often put in danger, literally having to go out into the wilds, are marginalized people because they are considered replaceable, because they are considered, you know, not as desirable or not, you know, as whatever. And you find that situation in real life too. And so I wanted to kind of be like, no, these are real people too, with just as many dreams and aspirations and needs as everyone else. And if we all work together equally, then there is no one person that has the burden of all the work.
Can we talk about the art? Just because it's...
Can we please?
Yeah, yeah. It's great. And also, I was curious... was that always the idea that it was going to be flower zombies? Was going to be... Where did that come from?
So,
because that is something that makes the style of it so immediately distinct.
It was a wonderful chemical reaction of me and the artist, Emily Pearson, talking to each other about the idea and also about the world. And originally, before Emily came on, I had this idea, and they weren't even zombies. They were just people that had gone bonkers because of the plague. And I asked her what she wanted to do, and she was like, I really like mutated stuff. And I was like, I'll figure it out. And then we started talking to each other, and she loves drawing nature. And she was like, I really love nature and cute girls. And I was like, well, okay.
So much in common already.
Yeah, we're good friends now. But going back and forth, we realized we wanted it to be beautiful. And we wanted nature and the idea of nature reclaiming kind of the things that had been taken to be a big part of the feeling of the book, because it adds to the isolation and the immediacy. And I don't know who said it first, but we ended up on the same page where we're like, okay, the disease makes it so their bodies are very fertile to seeds. That's one of the things that it does. And so they can just have plants growing out of like all of their wounds and their eyeballs and like all this stuff.
Is
and
that why all the characters, because all the characters sort of have like these lines.
That's just style.
Okay.
That style. I actually really like that too. But Emily is incredible. And the more room that I give her to breathe, the more incredible stuff she sends back.
And one of my, like, almost all of my favorite panels are actually the quiet moments post-attacks, where Emily and also with Marissa's colors really, really captured that the reclamation feeling that you were talking about. This feeling that when we're gone, this is what remains, but in this way that's both tragic and like absolutely stunning.
Marissa, our colorist, is unstoppable. I loved Emily's art from the moment I saw it, and then getting the pages back, I was blown away. And I was like, who could possibly even begin? And the first person I reached out to was Marissa, and I had already seen her work. She's amazing. I know her just as a person as well, and she's great. I didn't know what she was going to do for the book. I expected it to be good. I was blown away. She really added a mood and tone to the whole thing that was exactly what we wanted and also what we didn't know we wanted. It just incredible.
Just quiet in places that I could not begin to imagine when reading even the scenes that, you know, like scenes that I love, but like the combination of the two of them on this book just added this depth and this quiet to the nature in it that I think just works beautifully.
It's beautiful to look at.
I agree. I think there's a real challenge to helping control the pace at which a reader consumes a comic, and to have artwork that is built in such a way that will slow you down to appreciate can really add an element to the story that otherwise you would be missing.
I agree. And the color is actually, the art, the line art was incredible, and Emily is already a master at pacing. And then the colors made me pause more. It made me really take in, there's a couple of pages that are pure nature, and it really just, I would sit there for like 5 minutes, be like, I could just look at this.
Whenever you would send me pages, when they would come back, I would just be staring at it. Yeah. Just.
Can you give me another book that people, other than this book, should be picking up, since we're here in the month of Black Panther, and you know, we'd all like to be better about representing things. What are people maybe not necessarily reading that you love and people should be reading?
Only the first issue of this is out right now. My apologies, because I'm blanking on the artist's name. I feel really bad about this. But Saladin Ahmed's Abbott from Boom, 1970s black investigative journalist. She's investigating strange supernatural deaths that are tied into the death of her husband. I need to find out who the...
I'm working on it now, if you want to make more recommendations.
So that one is at, Sammy Cavella.
Oh, yeah. They did a beautiful canvas from Black Mask.
Yeah. That the art is absolutely astounding, but I also have a strong soft spot personally that the 70s in particular are an amazing time historically and aesthetic that I feel, especially with black characters, is not taken as seriously as it should be. It's usually a canvas for parody and comedy. And to see their work together telling a very serious, beautiful story.
It's really good.
It's stunning.
No surprise.
Like pacing is immaculate on it so far, really draws you in from the beginning, and characters that I'm absolutely already in love with, including a couple of them that I haven't technically met yet, but the hinting just has me already proposing to each of them.
Oh, so good. I read things in trade, so it's really hard for me.
That's okay.
Are we just doing comics or are we doing...
It could be anything. I mean, if you want to do,
I just
like,
bought
YA
the
or
Changeling by Victor Laval.
That's the only book from him I haven't read yet, and he's amazing.
He wrote this book that changed my life called The Ballad of Black Tom, and also another book called The Devil in Silver, which also was very important to me. And I cannot wait to get into The Changeling, because this dude is painfully good. So
thank you.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to throw it back to me. Take it away, me. Thank you, me. Okay. So in addition to Danny and Vita's book that's coming out, Kwanzaa also, I feel like, not just because you're both at Black Mask Studios, but I think are dealing with a lot of very similar issues. The Wilds is dealing with both people of color and queer characters, and you are dealing with people of color. And it's interesting because the way in which the protagonist looks suggests a possibility in America's Sweetheart, or certainly I think that people might start to assign, as people do, based on how folks look.
So wait, are we talking about black or black AF?
Black, I was talking AF. About black AF in that
gotcha.
Moment.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I always try to bring to these stories is context, because that's one of the things that I felt like was really missing from a lot of stories that, you know, are coming out about like people of color. It's just like you have the context for the readers. It's like we have this character who is this color, but then there's no context in the story around that and how people would react to that. So with America's Sweetheart, I wanted to take somebody who was like an altruistic, ideal American. She believes in the apple pie version of America that should exist, and, you know, put her in a situation where she's going out into the world. She's like this very powerful character and she wants to help people. And the real conflict in the story isn't necessarily like, you know, a super fight or anything, though that does happen. There's like the super action. It's her kind of fighting against the cynicism of America. You know, that's like the real conflict there, where, you know, she is on paper acceptable and yet still not accepted, and how that kind of impacts her.
It's like every black woman on a day that ends in Y.
Yeah.
But
and it's such a simple concept to say, like, okay, so we're going to take, what if it was Captain America or Superman? Everything exactly the same, like that, like, yeah, like apple pie, baseball, all that stuff, like as American as you can be, as being pro that as you can be. And the only difference is it's a black woman in the role. What happens? And it changes everything.
Right. And that's one of the things that, like, I thought was, like, so interesting, because it is part of the black experience. Like, I was inspired by, you know, a number of things, like Icon as a character from Milestone Media was, like, you know, that Superman archetype, but he was a conservative, like, he had conservative values, you know?
And yeah, that's why when they decided to bring him back, I'm like, you know, he'd be a Trump supporter, right? Like, what are we going
to
do?
Well, I don't think he would. I think he was more of, like, if I was to use somebody to base him off, I think he was more like Colin Powell. You know, but those kind of people were very interesting to me, like Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell. Like, I see them and I
Omarosa?
Think, like,
no. I was going to say,
Omarosa's from the Opportunist Party. Like, that's her political leaning. I mean, like, and I can't. I can hate
I was
on
just
that
checking. That was
context.
A litmus test because I was about to drag you.
But I do think that's interesting because it's just part of the experience. If you're raised a certain way and you're taught to believe a certain thing, like, how do you reconcile that when you bring it out into the real world? Like, I sometimes think about, like, somebody who has that worldview and is a person of color sort of thinking, like, well, I'm doing everything right. You know, so do I have to do some sort of mental gymnastics in order to maintain this, whatever? So I don't have the lead character, Ellie, in Black Ev dealing with that in that context, because I wanted her to be, you know, purely altruistic. You know, like, she's just a good person. Like, she is the archetype of, like, I just want to do what's right. And the rest of the world is kind of, like, wrong in a sense.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing about America's Sweetheart, this run is part of the world of the original Black run, but different. And Kareem, who actually does make an appearance in this. Kareem is
spoilers.
Sorry. So yeah, I'm going to sequester myself until Black Panther comes out, because I'm not going to be any good to anybody. But just Kareem, he got his powers by accident. Inner City Kid was shot by the police, died, came back to life. Oh, hey, by the way, you have powers. And you are part of an elite group of people who have them. She was adopted, grew up in the suburbs, the country, practically, basically, was raised by a white family, and grew up in a world where Kareem and his, you know, whole contingent were already known. So she knew, okay, I have powers, I'm black, everybody knows, you know, that's okay. I'm going to put on my mantle and my cape and go out there and save people. So it's interesting, the two sides, because I think some people who are I think I expected Black 2 with her. Also, Black AF. So I'm like, you know. And it's not. This is another voice. This is another story. It's not just a black woman story, but it's a black woman that was raised in, like I said, in a different way that Kareem was. So even her language, how she looks at things and sees the world is different. She's like, no, we can be agents of good. She doesn't even realize that some people will not look at her like an agent of good. And there are some people, I guess, that are trying to explain that to her. But that dichotomy, that's what I'm trying to say, is interesting. And I also think, like, what made you think that would be the next part of the series? Like, I know, let's do something completely different.
It's kind of weird. Because America's Sweetheart was always in my head. Like, Black is originally planned as, like, just three books. Kind of, you know, my, you know, New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. Like, that's going to be kind of like the end of the book as far as my hands on it. But America's Sweetheart was always there as a follow-up to Black. And that was even before, like, Black Mask, there was an opportunity to, like, expand it. Like, that story was just there because I very much wanted to, again, have context. It's like, how does this play out in middle America? How does this play out for a young woman who's growing up, you know, in some respect with a white experience, you know, and with, you know, a family that loves her dearly, homeschools her, and, like, the whole, like, nine yards of, like, you know, like, modern conservatism. Like, where's that voice? Where's that being represented? So it was just kind of there. And once I started like writing it out and like fleshing it out, it really kind of seemed very important to me to tell that kind of story, like right after telling this kind of story, because I think sometimes people see black and they think that it's just that one, like, urban, violent, black, like, you know, they impress all these other things on.
Well, people get stuck on covers and names. Like, I've had arguments with people about the movie and then the TV show, Dear White People. And most people I tell, especially the TV show, I'm like, have you watched it?
Right.
Because it's not what you think. You're reacting to a title.
Right. Yeah.
You need to actually, it's actually a really deep conversation that these kids are having.
Well, and I think this speaks too to the, what we were talking about, even with Black Panther and the idea of, you know, monoculture and the fact that it's not that, right? Like, and not to, you know, bring politics into it too much, but it around the election and post-election, everyone started the working class. And it's like they were actually talking about one particular, the white working class. And it's like, well, you know, there's all kinds of people in that group.
Yeah. Everybody works.
Yeah, it's not just so. I think that's what makes it really important is that, like you said, that the portrayal of this, the diverse experience versus just like one type or one voice, you know.
So the one thing I wanted to also bring up about Black AF is that when I got the reader, I was like, wait a second, I thought it was 22 pages. I thought it was an issue. And this is like a book. This is 75 pages. This is a TPB. And so I wanted to ask, like, will there be another one? And what made you go with, you know, out the gate, new character, 75 pages, bam?
That was part of it. I mean, it was very much on purpose to do this all as like one shot because of the tone of the book, because it was in color, and because, you know, it was kind of more YA, whereas like Black was more mature. Like, I just wanted it to be in both the comic book shop and the bookshop because I know that that was the audience that would be reading a story like this. So, you know, it took a little bit of convincing, but yeah, you know, I was like, Black Mass, the next one I want to do is going to be like 80 pages, one shot, you know? And as for the story continuing, yeah, but probably not in a conventional way. I mean, there will be more stories with like Ellie, but I'm kind of just all about taking different approaches to like how I put out books.
Well, no, I think it's really smart because it's funny because there's this question about diversity and like, do diverse comics sell? And, you know, we keep hearing like from Marvel and sometimes DC and other people, oh, they're not selling and we can't push them. But my issue has always been with the outdated pre-ordering system that a lot of new, young, not just young people, but young readers, young people to the comics are
and
not
new readers,
and
new readers, period.
Just not getting that you know, that thing. And things like Moon Girl, Devil Dinosaur, and Squirrel Girl. Yeah, exactly. And they're doing really well in TPBs, in bookstores and things like that. So, and whenever I, you know, people say, well, is there really a market for this? I point them back to your Kickstarter for Black, which made over $90,000.
Oh, yeah.
And in like what, 4 days? And to the fever over Black Panther and the fact that the tickets are already like, you know, selling out for the first 3 days. So there is a market. It's just you need to know how to market to that, the diverse audience. Was that your thinking with going to TPB?
Definitely. And I mean, I kind of also knowing how the direct market works, like I didn't want to try and sell against like that, you know, attrition that comes from like doing periodicals, you know, because that audience wasn't going to be the one who really responded to this. You know, like if somebody was coming into the comic book store and was going to give America's Sweetheart a try, like, they need to just get the whole story. Like, I don't think that this would be like, you know, some guy in Boise, Idaho, like coming back month after month saying, and maybe there is, but saying, I want more America Sweetheart. It's like, I'll give this a try. Oh, I got the whole story. And the same thing for like, you know, a young, like, you know, Black girl in a bookstore going in and seeing it, you know, like, ooh, what's this? And I get the whole story and I leave. That's kind of my preference for how to do comics, but you know, you just have to deal with kind of like the realities of the market.
Well,
sometimes.
And it's also, we're in a binge watch mentality.
Yeah.
Now, you know what I mean? Like Netflix, you know, Amazon, even like Hulu and stuff. Like people were surprised at Runaways because they were like, wait, it's not all of it?
Yeah.
What do you mean I got to watch it every week?
Yeah, Star Trek, same thing. Like every week?
wait, what? So, and you're going to pay more. Yeah. So
like, that only works with Game of Thrones people.
Right. So, yeah, I think it's very smart. And I think you're also going to get a lot more people involved. Also, I heard you worked with a black female artist.
Yeah, Jennifer Johnson was someone that my editor Sarah Litt found. So, you know, once the concept was there and we kind of knew like what we were aiming at, we just really wanted to find an artist who we thought was going to be able to tell this story in a way that related not only to the themes and the narrative, but also to like the type of person who would be reading this book. And Jennifer's just like this awesome mega talent. Like I've loved the reaction people have had to her because she's not a known comic book artist. And she just like, along with this book, is coming out of the gate and swinging for the fences. And I think people are loving it. And she's a great storyteller too, because I sort of write scripts like the quote unquote Marvel way, where it's just like, I just say what's happening on a page. I don't like dictate like panels. And she just took it upon herself to really like lay a lot of this out in ways that like made it really engaging and fun for me to like then go back and script it, you know, and try to like play around with like how she was doing a lot of the panel work.
Yeah, I love it. All right, so before we wrap up, I asked Danny and Vita this, and I'm going to be asking anybody that comes in addition to your own work, which obviously people should check out, what's another book that, since we're in the month of Black Panther and also Black History Month, what's another comic that you have read or is coming out now that has black creatives involved?
Oh, there's so many. I've been tweeting about them this month, like kind of like going back. But the, you know, like one that I always like to shout out because it's something that came out with DC Vertigo and kind of like went a little like sideways until a creator got it back, was Prince of Cats by Wimberly.
Yes, Ronald is the
one,
truth.
And my editor, Sarah Litt, edited that as well. And it's just one of those books where I love Shakespeare. And I love Ron Wimberly, and you put those things together, and it's like a Reese's peanut butter cup.
It's
good timing. I think we have an article coming out today called "Casting Prince of Cats." So,
oh wow, that's amazing!
Yeah. I don't know who's on the list, but you check it out at sci-fi.com.
It is he's a beautiful artist, but he also wrote it. He wrote it. It's an '80s retelling, an '80s hip hop retelling of basically Romeo and Juliet,
but from the perspective of Tybalt.
Right, from Tybalt's perspective.
Okay,
and he uses I would say an updated form of iambic pentameter, and it's just mind blowing.
That's really cool.
The book and his
I'm the most casual comics reader in the room, so this is really
This is
I
a book
be writing
that
all of
yeah,
this down.
This one, yeah, we gotta have show notes or something because this is definitely
no, I got it.
It's definitely one, and his art is phenomenal. I'll show you some panels, but yeah,
cool.
When it went out of print for a while, and I remember when I met him, I'm like, I need this book. And he was like, as soon as it goes back in print, I'll find you. And I'm getting a hardcover edition. So I have to agree with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for that recording.
Cool. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for listening. You know the spiel that I always give. If you are not already subscribed, please subscribe to our podcast. Please give us a review. Please make sure you're also listening to the other sci-fi podcast, Strong Female Characters and the Fandom Files. And and check out what's happening on sci-fi.com, especially like if Prince of Cats is something you were already reading or you were looking to get into it maybe a little more. There is an article dropping today, and there's also going to be a lot of video content coming out this month
and
about a lot of different things.
28 Days of Sheroes is out.
Yeah.
It's a series I've been writing about black female, black women in geekdom and science. And there's like these little mini videos that show up on like across social media. The first one dropped yesterday about Cree Summer. The actress and voiceover, yeah. There's a lot more coming, so please check those out and retweet and comment and keep showing us love.
Yeah, and before we wrap up, can y'all tell the kids at home where they can find you online so they can follow you? Karima?
I am the Blurred Girl, TheBlurredGurl, basically everywhere, but y'all know I get mail on Twitter.
And you can find Black at Black Superpowers on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And that's Black Superpowers without the E's.
And it's Kwanzer, right?
And on Twitter, I'm at Kwanzer. So it's Kwanzer.
Perfect. And Instagram.
Awesome. Yeah. And Zadam Sudorsky, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Rock the Faces.
And my name is Danny Roth, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary. Also with one M. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week, and we'll see you again next week.